The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. I'm joined by Steve and Pete. You're all right, lads. Yes, it's the weekend. Yes, I'm on my own. Yes, I've got no one in the house, apart from me and Lola. Yes, I'm partying. It's her second birthday. She's got beef trachea, natural. Look, the cow's necks dried out. Nice. She's partying. Yeah. I've got a can of cider right next to me, right here. Yeah. What do you got, Steve?
Terry's chocolate orange.
Keep the energy levels up, Steve. Try, yeah. Terry's chocolate orange.
Should we explain that Lola's a dog, not a two-year-old child?
Oh, yeah. Lola's a dog, yes. Yeah. Her birthday is on the same day as Monty's, my youngest son. And, Megan, Fred, Monty, my mother-in-law, that's her mother, and two cousins as well, gone to Centre Parque. Yeah, Paco Centre.
Why have you not gone?
I'm banned. Right. Yeah, I'm banned. As Pete said, it was an incident in the rapids there, you know? Runny belly.
That was a yeah, that was a nasty incident, wasn't it?
Saying, what's wrong with the water? It's got a funny colour.
Oh. You should never fluff unless you're certain.
Fluff. I haven't heard that for years, fluff.
No.
My mother used that, fluff, yeah. Okay, and by the way, it's a question from Discord saying, is Paddy dead?
Ah.
It's somewhat sensitive, really, because... No, he's not. So, But Steve has got his notes, you know, from the WhatsApp group, because I did say, Pat, anything you want to throw in there, and I said, Steve will read that up for you. So, Steve, are you up to date on that? Have you got it?
There was a lot of messages today on WhatsApp, wasn't there? Oh. And if I'm honest, I spent the afternoon in the pub, so...
What? You spent the afternoon in the pub?
What?
Yeah.
You're a self-employed person, Steve. You can't afford to do that. What are you spending? Inflation, all that stuff. What's going on?
Well, it was supposed to be lunch, but you know how it turns out. You have a beer and then it turns into three beers. So.
Ah.
Ooh.
So.
Yes. All right. Good.
But don't worry. As I said, I'm on the Terry chocolate orange now. We're all good.
Sorted. Yes.
Be hung over by the end of the podcast.
I've got to say, Paddy's doing a Tory rant, you know, because every WhatsApp Paddy does involves a Tory rant, doesn't it? Anything.
Yeah.
Anything at all. Even that, like, he bought a heated blanket this weekend and he managed to switch it into a Tory rant. I don't know how he managed it, but he's blaming Tories for the, or Rishi Sunak for the gas and oil price rise. Now, listen, I'm not a big fan of what's going on in the Tory party, but I don't think he's in control of the oil and gas prices, is he, Rishi Sunak?
No, I've not seen this thread. Has he bought it because he now has solar panels and he can keep himself warm in the day by using the power of the sun?
Well, no, yeah, yes. He said he's basically powering his heated blanket from his solar panels. And he said, F you, Rishi. He's sitting there with his blanket wrapped around him.
Yeah. I'll have the last laugh.
Yeah, but he said it wasn't a rant. I'm just highlighting the unfairness of our society, an unfairness perpetuated by a small cabal of very wealthy, self-serving cretins. And he said, I can't do tonight, by the way. The whole country does better when we look after those with the least. Yeah. Well, the least what, though, you know?
What?
And I said, well, listen, I'll pass this on to Steve. He can do it on tonight's webinar on your behalf. And just how we should all remember that anger and class culture will serve the purposes of the very worst humans on this planet. Putin, Johnson, Murdoch, etc. let's be honest, Putin's a liar. Boris is a liar. But I wouldn't put them in the same bracket, really, Putin and Boris.
No,
would you?
Not really.
So they're deliberately trying to make everyone angry because that's the world in which they prosper. I just say, Steve, you getting this? And take a deep breath. Remember, we're all more alike than different. And our anger should be directed at those three rather than our neighbours. And then Pete said, you hate your neighbours, though. And Paddy said, yeah, they moved out. And I said, that's why he likes them. They're not there anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But the thing is, Rishi Sunak, right? What's he thinking? What is he thinking? It's now, to me, it shows he's not in it for the right reasons. And I say it's all about his ego. That's why I said, what's that? Why is he going that big job? Is it to serve and help the people? Or is it just raise his profile and because he's an egomaniac? Because let's be honest, he must have realised at some point, being the finance minister, right, that his finances would come under scrutiny in some way, you know? And when he raises taxes and it affects people who are, you know, not well off and that are literally having to decide between eating or heating, right, he must have realised his family would be looked at. And if they're paying for tax favours, that would come under the spotlight. So in my mind, he didn't see this. He just put his ego before what he thought was going to happen. You must know if you took the second biggest job in the government in charge of the finances of the country, your finances will probably be looked at and scrutinised, yeah?
Yeah.
So I don't understand. I just think, is it all, and we had this discussion there, is it all about ego in Patrick Pace, all about ego in the Conservative Party? Is it surely some people there, you know, doing it for the right reasons, aren't they? Aren't they?
Not many.
Not the Tory Party, I wouldn't have thought.
What about the Labour Party then? Are they doing it all for the right reasons?
Well, of course.
There's a massive amount of ego in all of it. If you're already a leader of the country,
yes.
It's a power thing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yep. But then, what's the better solution? I don't know. it's sort of all morally corrupt, isn't it? But I haven't got a solution, so I don't know.
So anyway, go on.
I was just saying, sort it out, Pete. Come on, you usually have the solutions to most problems.
So, well, Steve, it's the end of the week, and my brain's a bit fried. I'll come back to you.
Yeah. All right.
I'm non-dom. Non-dom, dear. You could do that by pulling a girl, couldn't you? You'd dig her back to your place or whatever and say, she said, good protection. Sorry, non-dom.
It's the end of the hard week. Brain's a bit fried. Yeah.
No, but that's why Rishi's come under a flack now.
Yeah, apparently, yeah,
apparently he had a green card as well in America for a long time. He had dual citizenship there. I don't know what that's going to do. But his missus is non-domiciled. So Steve will explain what this means. Steve.
Mm. It means he's non-dom jolly.
That's right. He's not dom
that's
jolly.
He's not any other dom.
No.
Have you seen this? I didn't realise this. I thought it was okay. So it's all right. But she's obviously, you know, from India. Her parents are multi-billionaires from India. She spends a lot of time there. Turn out she doesn't. She actually lives in this country. But non-dom is like non-dom tax status, which means she does not have to pay tax in Britain on her earnings abroad. So if you're living here, but you're earning lots of money from a country that's abroad, don't have to pay for it. And the thing is, you have to pay for that. You have to pay 30 grand a year to have a non-dom status. Of course, if you can afford to give away 30 grand a year in non-dom and it's worth it, you can be quite well off, haven't you? So it is a different rule for his missus, isn't it? Basically, and not for the rest of the country, which is a bit, you know, I think Rishi has gone down, massively gone down. When he first came on the scene, he is a young fella, you know, could be, you know, upset Boris and the apple cart there. Turns out he's pretty much the same as all of them, isn't he? Really?
Yeah, but it's probably Boris's cronies have probably set this up to downgrade his chances of leadership.
Knock him down a couple of pegs. Yeah. But hang on. Paddy said that as well. I think, well, hang on a sec. Surely people were even realise sooner or later journalists would have looked into the background affairs of the of the Chancellor anyway, wouldn't they?
And he had a green card for the US until last year, which means that, you know, he's essentially saying, yeah, he'll become a US citizen. So it's sort of like, that gives
I think it is disgusting, this. I think everyone, and if you are more well off, you can afford to pay more. What's the problem?
And also, who brought in a rule that you could pay 30 grand to have one of these things?
I know.
And not pay, what's the logic in that? I don't understand.
But exactly, the people who have the least amount can't afford to pay. The people on the most can afford to pay, but they're just trying to get out of it. And you can get out of it via the system, via a legal system. I think that's insane. I think the entire system's messed up, you know? And I include the royals in that as well. It's just, we can't have equality when you've got massive families at the start. I mean, it's not anti-royal. I'm just thinking, let's sort it out. Let's try and help people, you know? In fact, you know what? Just thinking, I'm from Wales. I live in England. I can claim that, can't I?
do you do much work in Wales, though?
What, you don't have to do much work in Wales, do you? Does anyone?
That's where it would be tax-free, then.
Does anyone do much work in Wales? You just come from a liquid lunch, Steve.
That's true.
Yeah.
What were you doing there, Steve? Who were you with? A lady or a man?
No, it was with a client. It was just one of those ones where we decided to go out for some lunch. Yeah.
Well, that's nice. Okay. If it's clients, it's not too bad, is it? It's sort of like a working lunch. It's sort of like, sort of,
hospitality, allowable expense.
Hospitality, yes. It's greasing the palms of a client in a personal relationship, isn't it? That's fine.
Yeah.
So is your next sort of, contract work in the bag with them now? Is it, unless you did something very embarrassing, that's the point, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, hopefully after three pints, it wasn't embarrassing. Yeah. No, we're all good.
Steve's on the table naked after three pints. Oh, my God. Right. Listen, call the other video guy, okay?
he's not that good, but we'll put up with him.
Yeah. Anyway, boys, markets this week, anything, any observations? Observation?
I wasn't on last week's. Did you discuss Polarian?
Yes, we did, actually, yes.
Okay, right, I should probably listen to that podcast rather than ask questions again, so...
Give it a extra listen. Also, I talked about it in depth with Vadim Alexander, head of healthcare at SP Angel. Ironically, he's not sounding very well. So it's like you go see a doctor. He's not very well. He's not very good looking after himself. Why should I trust him? But so basically, say the same kind of thing. Different kinds of risks in companies. Polarian, for healthcare companies, clinical trials. There's that risk. Clinical trial risk. It was a big risk. Polarian passed that, flying colours. Two phase three trials. Yeah, they did one so well. They did a second one. Yeah, just showing off now, guys. So you did that. Then you got regulatory risk, which is, of course, the FDA black box risk, which we all thought was also a flying colour event. Didn't happen. And then you got commercial risk. So I'm saying right now, that's why I've reduced my holding in Polarian, because I'm not entirely confident as to what's going on in the FDA. So that's an unknown risk. Well, it's a known risk, but you know what's going on in the FDA. So that's why I'm happy. I said to Vadim, let's say Polarian is 60 pence right now, and... it'll get FDA approval and go to 120. It's less of a risk investing at 120 than 60 pence. Does that make sense?
Yeah, to an extent, but you've just missed out on a nice bit of upside, haven't you?
If you're in there, though, I'm still in there. Yeah, but if you're in there. And the FDA come up with some kind of ridiculous, sorry, guys, you've spelt Polarian wrong. And that's how you spell it. No, you don't. You spell Polarian, Palloian.
That's our company. We'll spell it how we like. No, you won't.
No, you won't. Oh. Not according to the FDA. Rejected. What? What's going on? So, I don't know. So, what I'm saying is...
So, my question about the resubmission, will we get an exact date of when we'll hear back from them, or is it just going to appear one day?
Six months.
Resubmission's happened.
No. I mean, see, when we find out the results, they get an answer.
It's 6 months. They said 6 months. I don't know where that's.
Yeah. So will we know? Will they give a date of that answer, or will it just appear one day?
Six months, Steve.
Exactly 6 months. The day when they said.
Well, it's up to 6 months. Vadim seems to think it will be 6 months.
It'll be one of those dates.
Yeah, they didn't actually. It's not a PDUFA date because it's resubmission. So normally they give you a date when they will give you an answer on the initial submission. But a resubmission, it doesn't seem to be a hard line date. Okay. So it could be a day before. Maybe not a day after. But it could be earlier. Who knows? But what I'm saying is, commercialization is when it goes crazy. With all businesses, the concept is amazing. And I said, listen, we all know Polarian's tech is globally significant. It's it's a leader in its field. We're assuming because it's got lots of papers written about it, all these people were going to use it, have written papers and validating it. So it seems it's going to fly off the shelves. We don't know that, though. So there's always commercial risk to every business. Until you start selling your product or service, until it starts gaining traction and growing, then you don't know. So, but what I'm saying is regulatory risk is bigger, maybe not so much now, because they've said they've had extensive discussions and they've ticked all the boxes that the FDA wanted to tick. So hopefully they covered off all the points. So maybe that... But what I want to say is, still, in my mind, I don't see commercial risk as big a risk as regulatory risk, Because I assume it will sell.
This is an interesting conversation because... So you're saying
£1...
Yeah, for once.
That's the first time you've ever said that in the podcast ever in like 6 years. This is now we get into it. At last, we're now having an interesting conversation right here.
Finally, the warm-up is over. We're now into the decent.
Take it all. Right. Now we're starting to hit here. Can pick up the speed. Go on.
But the funny thing is, most people listening to this go, yeah, I agree. £1.20. So take that example, right? So you're going £1.20. And I agree, yeah, that is a safer time to invest. But what's your, then what are you thinking it's worth? So you're going, it's worth getting into at 120 because you
No,
think
I'm not
it's
saying that. I'm not saying I will get in 120. If it shoots up like that, I'm not getting in. Because I'm not.
Right, okay.
But what I'm saying is the market always presents you with opportunities.
But when are you going to get in? When are you
when I see a good risk rewards. For example, if it shoots up like, you know, so 60 pence on the FDA approval, I'm not getting in then. Are you crazy? The biggest thing about buying stocks and shares is getting a good price, you know? Now, you don't buy when everyone is rushing in trying to buy, you know, let's go back to the old banana market analogy. You know, when there's 10 people in the market, you know, in the market somewhere trying to buy bananas, one guy selling two bananas, the price is going to go nuts. I'll wait for the day the banana man comes to the market with 10 bananas and there's two people there, you know? That's what I'm doing.
Aren't you trying to time the market, which, as we know, is impossible to do?
No, I'm trying to look at value because this is what I think will happen. This is, in my mind, this is how I play out. I can see FDA approval happening probably, okay? But I'm not confident of the black boxes of the FDA. So I'm going to step back a little bit, let the party start, join a bit fashionably late. But by that, what I mean is, they've got enough cash. Pretty much they had $38 million in cash by June the 31st, 2021, right? Now, they're burning about, I think they're burning $5 million, 6 months, the previous 6 months of that, all right? So if you look at that, let's say they're burning $10 million a year, okay? That's 3 years. But they're going to be going to manufacturing. Manufacturing costs obviously will rise. So whether it's on news of a funding update or something like this, I'll weigh it up. Listen, I love Plarium and I've had it for ages, but I'm not going to go in there because there's plenty of opportunities in the market, you know, to make money. And chasing prices up is the wrong way to make money. So there'll be opportunities. You may have a massive market sell-off, you know. So, like I said, there are plenty of stocks at good value. Absolutely plenty. Mm-hmm. Why? Because the market is generally sold off. Like I said, you will... There'll be people who will be listening to this now who've chased stocks, fear of missing out. They bought at a high, and now the stock is like 30, 40, 50% below where they bought at. And they thought, oh, I should have waited. You can always wait. There's always more time. Always. And so it's not a linear thing. People think it'll just go up and keep going up. No, it doesn't. No stock does that. So there'll be opportunities playing. We'll pull back on certain things. There'll be then when something pulls back, fear starts to come in. And then people say, oh, I started worrying. So, yeah, there's opportunities, you know? I mean.
But the interesting thing in the whole hype cycle, like once it's, let's hope, presume it gets FDA approval, gets into manufacture, blah, 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 then it becomes more of a, for want of a better word, boring stock, doesn't it? Because it becomes all that hype and that expectation has kind of happened.
But then Buffett says boring is good. If you find boring stocks,
I'd like a bit of boring after the last 12 months, to be honest.
Hang on a sec, right? Plarium's now is valued at £125 million market cap. That's the market cap there. So you say what they've got... 25 million in, so it's 100 million market cap, okay? So what's that based
enterprise
on?
Enterprise value.
Yeah, enterprise value, sorry. So what's that based on, that valuation?
Well, hope.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's not based on fundamentals, is it? You know?
No.
So that hope, and I think that hope will grow and go big. I think it'll get back towards, I think it'll blow past, you know, that previous high if they get FDA approval. But then you'd have a lot of people in there selling down. There'll be other things going on. There's always opportunity. If it doesn't come back, I won't get back in. I won't go back in big like I did before. Because, you know, I think, but they will. I know the markets, it'll take years for Plarium to reach its full potential fundamentally, you know?
Yes.
If they are growing at that rate, there'll be opportunities. The market sells off. Like I said, we need to think in years rather than months. Mm. Like,
I'd wait until it gets to about £3, Justin, then buy in about there. That'll be a good price.
The
thing is, if they own £3, Steve, they're doing 100 million in revenue, then that's the less of a risk because they are literally validated by it. Now, if they're 100 million and doing no revenue, that's a big risk.
That's exactly what I meant.
I think the funny thing is that your small holding now is probably bigger than ours.
I was just thinking that.
Let's look where they did it. They did 620,000 of revenue 6 months ending the 21st of June. So, you know, if you're basing it on a fundamental valuation, that's not it. It's based on hope, hype, you know, and potential. At the moment, you know, and I still think it'll go higher. But that's because once they get that regulatory approval, there's huge potential there. Huge, but that doesn't happen overnight. Doesn't happen overnight at all. You know.
No.
I went with the weekly webinar live down here. I went through the gear system, where if you talk about micro cap stocks, small cap stocks, and they're not yet, you know, churning a profit, so that. And they're going through their revenue growth is first, of course. They've still got early stage costs. Their revenue growth is first. They're still loss making. That's, you know, year one is revenue growth pretty much. Year two is probably EBITDA profitability, which is earnings before tax, depreciation, amortization. That's not actually cash flow positive yet, but they are, it's almost like they are generating cash, but they're still, you know, other costs they've got to cover. And then they get the pre-tax profit, then that's another year. You're talking 3 years at least before it really kicks into profitability. So we should think in years, not days, months, and weeks. There's opportunities, always opportunities. The market goes in cycles, up and down. I've seen lots of companies, you take off and think, oh, it's never come back. And all of a sudden it's back to where, you know. And then oddly, a lot of people don't buy in because they think, oh, someone won the company because the share price has come back.
It's
a general market sell-off. So it's funny when, you know, that, I don't know who it was, it's easy in a bull market to say, oh, if this pulled back, I'd literally mortgage my house and buy it. And then it does pull back with everything else, and you can't because the pullback is surrounded by fear and worry and uncertainty. And then you wouldn't actually mortgage your house because, the economy may be turning down. So it's you've got to have a bit of guts and balls to buy. And if you look at valuations right now, the market's in good valuations out there worth buying. But people are, it's the war, the inflation. But we know about that. Is it priced in? Are we at max fear? Because once we are, that's very bullish for the market. Because, you look at the times going back over time when it's been max fear. Are we at peak fear here? Because we could be close to it, you know? So,
On using your logic, and I know it's talking about regulatory kind of the lottery of regulatory
approval.
Sorry, approval. That's the word. Thank you. But using your logic across other stocks in the portfolio, you could argue that, well, you might as well sell all of them now and wait until they're all safer.
That is about timing the market. All I'm worried about is the regulatory risk. It's a known risk. Yeah. And I talk about unknown risks and known risks. Timing is unknown. You don't know when the market's going to sell off or rally or anything. Now, we've come off the bottom in microcaps a little bit. We've had a little bit of a bounce, you know. Now, if you'd gone back like 2 weeks when we were heading down, or 3 weeks, no one would have thought we're at the bottom here yet. There was so much fear and bearishness out there. All the indicators were showing super bearishness. That's the best time to buy it. And now, people say, we've had a bit of a bounce. Now, if you'd sold when it was the ultimate bearish, you'd have lost money now because it's just bounced. Like XPF, for example, XP Factory, it's done like 35% in the last 3 weeks. Why? Because, you know, we've still got a lot of worry around. But so if you'd have sold like 3 weeks ago, it's rallying, you go back in, you're so low and bought a bit higher. That's not the way to do it. That's not the way to do it.
No.
Never into punching duty, were you? Anyone see the front seat? It's not an attractive show. That's the way to do it. That was domestic abuse, wasn't it? Because Mrs. Punch was quite, she abused him, right? Mr. Punch.
Mrs. Punch.
Yeah, wasn't it Mrs. Punch?
Judy.
Oh, Punch and Judy. Was it? What's their surname then?
The policeman used to beat her up, wasn't it?
Did the policeman used to beat her up, really?
Yeah, he had his truncheon, didn't he?
No, he used to beat Mr. Punch up.
Oh, did he? Oh, okay, Punch. Maybe I watched a different show.
And Judy.
Was it Mr. Punch? His name surely can't have been Punch.
Yeah, on Punch and Judy, a traditional puppet show featuring Mr. Punch and his wife Judy. Which is Mr. Punch? What's his first name? Why is he formal? And she's like, yeah, first name.
It'd be like Keith, I think. Keith Punch.
It's a dominating thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You call me Mr. Punch, but you'll be known as Judy.
Typically, most of the puns are one of the characters who usually falls victim to a punchy slapstick. The Telegraph called it a staple of British seaside scene. It's not really.
Terrible. Not really.
Yeah. The show is performed by a single puppeteer, insert never, inside a Victorian... Yeah, really ugly-looking people, weren't they?
I think it has its roots in the 16th century Italian Commedia dell'arte, doesn't it?
That's amazing you just got that off the top of your head, because you didn't know if Mr. Punch's
name... Yeah, I just remembered.
Yeah.
I just remembered that it has its roots there.
It doesn't say what his name is. Poor name. I'm just typing in... We got off track here. That was one of the best tangents we've got on for a long time. Yeah. Actually, Wikipedia, finding out Mr. Punch's... It is quite formal, though. Mr. Punch, and that's Judy. Introduce yourself like that to other people. Hello, yeah. I'm Mr. Wade, and that's Megan. it's been a downgrade. Anyway, listen, yes. No,
that's two interesting conversations in one podcast.
Yeah. Do you know what I was going to say? So if you look at my stock portfolio, this is how you should allocate your capital, right? This is how you should do it. Now, depending on how experienced you are as an investor, but I'd say the most new investors who want to earn a decent bit of cash, you've got to go into microcaps, but microcaps are very volatile. Doesn't mean they're risky. Volatility and risk is not the same thing. The markets can be very volatile. Mm. Doesn't mean a company that's got lots of cash and profitable is risky, you know, or growing. So if you're looking at, that's why you need to have quality filters. But, you know, you don't, if you are in microcaps, you should look at different sectors. Company business sectors, so, you know, healthcare, whatever, or retail, all that's a different sector. So that would help you a little bit in diversification. But if you are like new, then I'd say, you know, put a big chunk in a good diversified fund, like a Vanguard fund, you know, it's like low cost, good returns. So let's say you're new to the market, put 50 or 60% in a fund, and that will give you a decent return above inflationary rates, way above the banks. And then with the rest, say 40%, have a bit of fun with, you know, in fact, there was a while back, they said you should always have a bonds equity split 60-40, which is nonsense, right? In fact, Buffett's a good video. I'll talk about that in a little bit. Talking about nonsense myths and things. Anyway, so they say the older you are, the more percentage you should be in bonds. So if you're 60, you should have 60% in bonds. But bonds pay way below inflation now, so not worth it. So I'd say if you're like 60 and you are inexperienced, have 60% in a good fund, you know? And then maybe 10% in a high dividend paying stock that's, you know, FTSE 100, it's always paid out cash, always increase the dividend, because that'll give you a bit more exposure to upside. And then maybe if you want to have a bit of fun, maybe, you know, 30, 40%, 10% each, maybe if you're a bit more, if you're inexperienced, but no more than 10% in microcaps. Because, you know, until you start learning, because it'll take you 5-10 years to really get into it. It's that 10,000 hours scenario, isn't it? You're only very good at anything if you do 10,000... Is it Malcolm Gladwell, I think? Outliers. People who are very good at something have done 10,000 hours worth of practice at it. And if you work at how many... In fact, do the math, Pete, while I'm thinking, talking. But how much is 10,000 hours? If you did like 10-hour days...
Yeah.
What, 10,000 days? How many days is that? Wow. How many years is that?
That's 1,000 days, isn't it? If you do 10 hours a day.
Yeah, 1,000 days. 3 years if you did 10-hour days.
3 years. Yeah,
so if you invest in the stock market, 10 hours a day learning, 3 years. And no one does 10 hours a day, do they? I do, actually.
And no one does 7 days a week as well, maybe.
So anyway, so what I'm saying is, and then the more experience you get, the more you feel you know about risk-reward, all that stuff, then maybe reduce that, you know, that sort of reliance on the fund, 40%, 20%, whatever. But then in your microcaps, within the microcaps as well, you should always look at, you know, you, like I said, maybe 10% should be a pre-revenue loss-making, close to pre-revenue, but with massive potential, you know, big end growing markets could be the maker of your portfolio. And that's like a Pelarian, you know, that is like a Pelarian. It's like loss-making, it's close to pre-revenue, but you know it could be massive. and it could make a big difference to your portfolio. So you've got 10% there, then say a 10% in a company that's generating revenue, is growing, not quite profitable, something like that. Then you've got a level where it's growing and it's generating EBITDA positivity. Then maybe you've got a level again where it's growing as well and profitable. So that kind of mix, you know, so you've got the real risk at the right one end, but huge. So the higher the risk, you know, the higher reward. But don't overexpose yourself to it. Have a little bit of fun. That's like a fun corner. There's room in that fun corner for one or two stocks, but not just general oil and gas. Not that kind of stuff. I'm talking about stuff that's, you know, best in class technology somewhere that you think massive growing end markets. They are unique stocks. Those kind of things. They don't come very. Plarium is a unique stock, but I wouldn't, you know. But having anything above, you know, 20-30% in a company like that is, you know, quite risky. Very risky.
Yeah.
You know, but there's always room for one of those, I think, because you have the fun on the end. But you go wrong when you overexpose. You know, overexpose to something, this is going to make me rich. You're almost convinced. You wake up and, you know, and say, it's going to make me rich. They get FDA approval, it's going to make me rich. It could do, but you've got to have a strong stomach to take on that volatility. Like you said, you know, Brown Wednesday. Wow. That shook so much confidence in people who are. But I see it now. So, you know, I do see sort of some of the members in Discord there saying they've upped their holding in Plarium. And I think just try and stick the rules. And it's very hard because the market is very emotional. Just try and stick the rules and not overexposing on certain stocks or any stock, really, because, you know, that's asking for trouble. And
but that's the thing, isn't it? Because you don't want to be underexposed. If the great news comes, but equally you don't want to be overexposed. So it's finding a balance that you're comfortable with. And happy with potentially losing the money you're investing, or not losing, but, you know, you've got to only bet with the money you're happy to lose. Almost.
Well, for example, I just posted some videos on my website, new ones. But within that, I just cover the sort of diversification model thing. And diversification protects you against risk and against reward, though. So, like I said, if you have 100 stocks, all equally weighted, let's say you've got a £100,000 portfolio, you've got £1,000 in each, and you've got, you know, 100 stocks, and one of them goes bust, your portfolio value only goes down by 1%. Yeah, that's fine.
Exactly.
But if you get a 10-bagger, and 10-baggers are really hard to get, you only gain 10%. So I'll take on a bit more risk for a bit more reward. So if you go on 10 stocks, for example, and one of them 10 bags, then it doubles your portfolio size, which is nice, the value, you know? Or if you've got 5 stocks, but of course, if that goes bust or goes wrong, you lost 10%. Can you handle 10%? I can. I thought if I got 100 grand, I'm going to I lose 10 grand in there. But as long as you stick 10%, if you start going nuts, and go up to like half your portfolio value, you know. But even with 5 stocks, and remember, not all stocks stay the same. So this is assuming all stocks in your portfolio are still the same. You've got 5 stocks, and say one of those, you know, blue sky portfolio things, you've got 20% in, and it crashes, you know. So you own 5 stocks. That's 20% off your portfolio. That's a big chunk, isn't it? Going from 100 grand to 80 grand in one stock. Bloody hell! So you've got to understand, how good are you with risk reward, stomach in that nonsense? You know, so not too greedy, but not too conservative either. You know,
no, exactly. It's trying to find a balance, isn't it, and that you're comfortable with. But you've got to look at the worst case scenario, and then, you know, not beat yourself up if it does go to the floor, because, you know, you should be happy with that risk that you've invested in that level.
But it's emotions. See, everyone gets carried away. They start piling more into it, almost in their heads. They're thinking to themselves, they look at the reward only. That's all people do.
But you've made big gains in the past, you've kind of overexposed.
Yes, because I've
yourself.
Seen it as a no-brainer, because the valuation has been so low. And I thought, hang on, the potential is massive here. And so, like, you know, I did it a couple of times with, I did it on Bidstack. I did it on
Bidstack was only undervalued based on potential. It wasn't undervalued based on fundamentals.
Well, no, this is where I saw it. I saw it was a very hype stock, right? It was like literally 13 million market cap. They had about 4 million in cash. And I thought, I've not seen anything like this on the market as yet. Gaming is massive. Ad tech gaming is going to be massive. And literally, there's nothing priced in them. I think it was close to 5 million in cash and then about 13 million market cap. I thought, well, worst case, weighing up the risk and reward, worst case scenario, how long will that cash last? It's got to last at least 12 months, hasn't it? So, and look at it, you know, so that's where, and also the hope hype caught on. But also with But I also got out of that because they didn't transition very well into fundamental support, a backup of that valuation. When it got 80 million, and they literally came out with a trading statement saying they were 40 grand in revenue. I thought, what? Yeah. Get out! So, but with differences, I did the same with, I remember I was in Turkey on holidays trying to buy Escape Hunt.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
I saw
yeah.
that it was like 7 million market cap. And they had like 4 million in cash. And I thought, this is catch. They're growing. They seem very professional. They've got deals with the BBC, deals with now Netflix and all that. So they're a very professional outfit. And I thought, and I read all the reports on it, and you know, they said, of course, it's very popular escape rooms, but it'll the industry will change to the point where all these independents will go out of business, and there'll be one, you know, one or two big players. And because they were listed, I thought they're going to be the big player. And, you know, just everything did it. The way they wrote RNSs, their branding, everything was very good, very professional, you know. But now they are transitioning into, you know, fundamental, you know, undervalued. Because they're like, you know, what do you mean, one and a half times revenue, pretty much. So they're still, to my mind, they're still undervalued. That's why I haven't sold.
Yeah.
So, so that's, you know, I think when you get a situation like that, when there's literally... You know, and that's either people don't understand the stock or don't know about it, like Bidstack was new, or it's been written off because a lockdown happened as well. But you see the potential there, and they've got cash. And
yeah.
So that's when you think, in fact, you know what? There's so much risk priced in there. No one's looking at the reward. But the trouble is people look at reward too much, and that's it. That's, you know, they ignore the valuation and think, all they see is the upside. Oh, this could make me rich. You're not looking at the risk. You know, you've got to factor in the risk. The risk is the most important thing. If you factor in the risk, everything else will take care of itself. You know? Everything.
Yeah.
You don't have to look at anything else. If you factor, what's the worst thing that can happen here? Tick all the boxes off. And if you do that side of the equation first, then everything else will take care of itself. Do you know what? It's quite frustrating today that the market sort of went up in certain areas, certain stocks, and especially with social media. And this is a general rule of life. Social media is not good for your happiness because it's all about people pretty much boasting and you compare. Comparisons are never good, ever, in any walk of life, are they? Because people only show their best bits on social media. Even the stocks, they'll show you the winners. They generally don't show the losers, you know? It's like that. Do you ever get that, though? I mean, that's why I get a note of Facebook. And I literally now, I think I can come off Facebook. The thing I use it for now is we see photographic memories coming up from years ago, which is quite nice. But I'm not interested in other people's posts. Hardly ever. Are you?
Mm.
Steve, are you still alive?
Yeah, I'm still here, yeah.
In fact, I like Steve's posts. They're not boasting. Steve's walking posts are quite nice. But, you know, people are just showing off. And it's now on Instagram and TikTok. People are just showing off. And they think, that's not your life. Stop doing that. It's not good for the mental health of others who have, you know, who think my life is not as good as theirs. It's just comparisons. It's not good for you, is it?
Steve.
Yeah. But you know what? Weirdly, but
Steve,
I stopped
what are you
posting.
Doing?
Nothing. I'm just listening.
Are you listening?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Mm. No, do you know what? Interesting.
What?
Yeah, I got the radio on.
Radio 4.
No, but I've even stopped posting a lot of stuff on Facebook. Even the walking stuff, I stopped because I thought that. I was like, do people really care about my walking? Probably not, actually. Why am I even posting it?
No, that's not showing off either. I think just the scenery is lovely and it's, you know, nice to see. And about walking, you're not showing, it's not like, you know, we're bling and you're in Dubai and all that stuff, you know, with the ladies, is it? You know, you've got walking boots, you know.
Weirdly, with work, I've had quite a lot of people trying to convince me to go to TikTok. They're like, oh, you'll like it. And I'm like, oh, I'm trying to get off Facebook and Instagram less. Yeah. Not get off it, sorry, use it less. I don't want another one to add into the mix.
I know my kids, they're so addicted to it. And literally, I have to lock their screen time down and all that. But even then, it's so addictive. It's just scroll, scroll, scroll.
Mm.
And there's little clips. So, and apparently, we know it's breaking all-time records. It's now more watched than YouTube. It's like, it's taken off like crazy. It's absolutely madness.
Apparently, their algorithms are far better than Instagram and Facebook because they literally do. That's people. It's weird though because people sell that to me. They're like, oh no, it's brilliant. It'll really get you hooked in. And I'm like, I don't want to be hooked in. That's literally the opposite. I want something that's. I don't know. I don't think I want anything else. Literally,
I was thinking about doing it just for, you know, because my kids are on it, and I'm going to do a monthly thing on the podcast with them just to do little invested things. But I can't think of anything to put on there really. But apart from boring stuff compared to what you see, because my kids watch nonsense. But anyway, back to comparisons, right? There's a point here. It's annoying when you see other people posting their stocks are rising and yours are not. But you got to realize, you know, you've got to have patience. If you're investing, you know, growing companies, good value, expanding in markets, they will do well. And you have to have patience. By that, I mean years, not weeks or months. People do trade, of course, but they tend not to put a lot into trades anyway. So they're not making big money. They're big gains. Like some people hold 100 stocks, and then one company will spike like crazy, and they'll say, "Wow, I'm a genius!" Well, you own 100 stocks. You've got like £5 in each. Doesn't matter, does it? But you know, the companies I'm investing in, I honestly believe they can go from microcap to mid-cap, and that doesn't happen overnight. It takes years, you know. But the thing about that is, you don't have to do a lot. You can just sit there, just monitor the updates. If they're okay, carry on with them. They'll have big volatility and big swings, and that'll happen, you know. And life, as we invest in, is largely about mindset. And I was listening. I'd recommend this podcast to you. You know, Dragon Den guy, Stephen Bartlett. He interviewed Daniel Pink. He's the author of like 5 New York Times bestsellers, including his latest one is The Power of Regret, which he talks about how looking backward moves us forward. But his books are about business and creativity and work and all that stuff, behavior. But in this interview, right, with Stephen Bartlett, and this stuck in my mind, because I walked the dog, and this stuck in my mind. He talked about an at least and an if only mindset. I rewinded a couple of times, and then he gave an example, right? And I didn't know what he meant by this. But basically, an at least mindset is better than an if only mindset. And so he gave the example of Olympic medal winners. And I don't know whether this is factual or not. He said a lot of pictures have been taken, or videos have been taken, of Olympic medal winners. You know, the 3 on the podium there, the bronze, the silver, and the gold. And apparently, the happiest person on the podium is obviously the gold medal winner. You think, oh, that's no surprise. They've won the gold. They're the best, you know. The second happiest is the bronze winner. And you're like, well, why is that? Because the bronze winner has got at least mindset. At least I got a medal, you know. I got a medal here. There's lots of people I competed against there didn't get a medal. Now, the silver guy, then, if only I'd started better, I could have got gold. And what's the silver? It's nothing. You know, the gold is the thing to have. So that's the... If only.
That's interesting, because it's true when you think about it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it, though? Because the bronze guy was potentially thinking he could have got gold and he had a bad race or whatever, and he's ended up with bronze, so he's disappointed.
Yeah, it could be.
He's never going
to
win, Pete.
Yeah, they're talking generalisations. They're talking generalisations here, but, I mean, of course, if you're an ex-gold medal winner, or if you get a bronze medal and you're just happy to be a medal, of course you'll be ecstatic because it shows you're there. You've got an Olympic medal, you know. But the silver guy is one away from being the best in the world at that point in time. I think that's annoying. Whereas the bronze medal, you're 2 away from being it. So don't get away your station. But at least you've got a medal.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, I mean, maybe that's an example. It's not 100%, you know, bulletproof, but that mindset is like, even now, you know, it's easy to have first world problem breakdowns, but you think, hang on, is it? At least I'm not in bloody Ukraine, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there are people there, you know, look, haven't got water even. You know, there are people who are professionals, you know, who can't even, you know, they're literally scraping on the ground looking for food and drink. So, I mean, always look at that. Always be appreciative of the stuff we have, you know? And so, you realize, oh, it's like Gfinity fell off a cliff, you know? The people whinging like hell about that. You know, calm down a sec. Your portfolio's gone. Well, that stock's gone down by 50%, 60%. Okay, fair enough. In the grand scheme of things, not a big deal. Is the business still valid? Yes, it is. It'll grow. It's fine. You'll get it back. Don't sell at the bottom. That's the whole problem. Your emotions are causing you to sell at the bottom, and your emotions are getting you wound up. Just step back a bit. You know, look at the bigger picture, you know? But that's worth listening to that guy, because that stuck out, that little analogy. I love analogies like that, you know?
Oh, you're a big analogy fan. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a big fan of the analogy. I did a poll on Twitter early on.
Right.
I said, when researching a stock to invest into, what do you pay more attention to first? Financial statements or the story?
Financial statements.
Steve, seriously, if I said to you, find the financial statements for this company, how would you do it?
In the financial statements section. Yep. It's in the second drop-down menu to the left.
But stories are massively powerful, you know? And if you are, I'm re-listening to Warren Buffett's book, The Snowball. It's brilliant. Because the guy is a genius, right? People say he's a grandfather in a really way. He's a genius. I mean, even he always had a system. He's amazing with maths. He's way above his school. He didn't have to work. He's almost photographic memory on numbers. From an early age, he used to do silly things like sit in his porch and write down registration plates of cars and trying to figure out patterns. You know, he's that kind of, he's a genius, the guy is. And so when it comes to financial statements, he just figured out the system. He's gone through gambling, at the track, and all that kind of stuff, figuring out numbers and systems. But he realised, and he came up with some good stocks. He started off stockbroking, you know, and he came up with good stocks, but he couldn't sell them. And he couldn't, because he couldn't public speak, because he was so nervous. But he had to realise he had to become a good storyteller to sell it, because he'd recommend a stock to his friends. And, oh, it sounds good, because he was quite young when he started. And then he'd go and buy it from another broker, you know, and so he wouldn't get any commission. But stories are very powerful in there, and you have to be able to, it's like, you know, I think a good company should sell it in one line, you know. And but anyway, the result of the poll is, I didn't get as many votes as Elon Musk, but anyway.
No.
But 70.6% said the story is the most important thing. And 29.4% said financial statements. And I suppose you start with a story first, and then you look a bit deeper, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That goes against my rules, but yeah, okay.
Yeah.
No, of course, Steve.
Not many people are deep researchers like you, Steve.
Yeah, I know.
Steve can spend months on end researching before he figures out, what's the ticker?
Don't
even sleep some nights.
Steve's looking for the third option. Yeah, what's the ticker? Is it the financial statements, the story, or the ticker? That's what he looks at more. Yeah.
Have you invested any more money? ISA week, isn't it, this week? New financial year?
About that. I am going to put some more in my Vanguard, but I've not got around to it.
I did bed and breakfast with ISA, with Barclays online. It's so simple. It's like all online. It's very good. So I had a little bit of stock in my other account.
Bed and breakfast? What do you mean?
Bed and ISA.
What?
It's a system called Bed and ISA. So,
oh, right, okay.
So if you got stock not in an investment account, not in an ISA, I mean, it's in a normal account that, of course, if you make capital gains tax, you're liable for tax, and you want to put in your ISA, of course, every year you've got about 20 grand's worth of cash or stock in doing ISA. You basically go online and they sell it and buy it quickly. There's no, I don't know, they do it, I don't know, it's not on the market, basically. So,
I see.
Yeah. So, so basically, it disappears from your investment account and it's rebought in your ISA account. Quickly. I literally put the order in the last minute, last 2 minutes of market close on Thursday. It was done on Friday morning before 8:30 in the morning.
Why is it called bed and ISA? Oh, because it's overnight.
You bed it. They bed it. I don't know what they do. They bed it. I don't know what they do. They take it to bed. They wake up. They wake up. It's in your ISA. Ooh, I see.
Yeah. What stop is that?
Not saying, Steve.
Okay.
It's top secret.
One of these.
Yeah. No, it's not really. Have you put anything in, Peter? Any tucked in?
Not yet, no.
Okay.
Oh. Well, we're only 4 days into the financial year, so... Mm. There's still time.
Plenty of time. I know, it's this funny rush, isn't it? Rush for people sort of getting there. Any news from the companies this week, boys? Any news at all?
I haven't really, no. For me, it's been a relatively quiet week.
Did you get that noise news this week?
It did. They had their final results. Yes. So, I'll go through it, right? So, revenue's up 20%, which is good. I was at top-line growth, 20%, 4.3 million. Order book up 25% at 3.3 million at 31st December, the biggest they've had. Cash of 5.1, that's net cash. That's including a couple of loans they've got as well. And, of course, they've acquired the Green Hydrogen Development Company, securing two first development projects in Shoreham, Inverness. Now, it's worth noting... These two areas are the highest growth areas of the business going forward. And yet they're still doing 20% growth off their other business, which is data software, all that stuff, critical metals. So I quite like that. And like I said, once these hydrogen hubs kick in, that's when growth will really turbocharge on hydrogen, you know? And did you see the government this week? They provide update the strategy, energy strategy, provide £340 million package as part of the energy security strategy. The largest tranche of this is £240 million into a net zero hydrogen fund to support the production of hydrogen as clean, low-cost fuel for the industry, which is very important, of course, because when you're in an early sort of tech, it's quite costly. So anything to bring the cost down is very good. So, yeah, I think green hydrogen is going to be massive over the next few years. Massive. Yeah. Do Putin understand what he's done here? He's basically bankrupted Russia for the next two decades because no one's going to buy. Once you stop that buying of oil and gas, it won't go back to that because you've got two situations that's against him. And that's, first of all, the decarbonisation of the energy sector. That's happening, whether he likes it or not. Now, who you buy that oil and gas off until that happens is, you know, was largely, well, not largely, but partly Russia. If you Germany, now they're not going to. Now everyone's cutting back on Russia. So not only that, not only was his revenue going to be going down, but now even faster so, because no one's going to stop, everyone's stopping to buy off them. Even the Germans are saying now, who rely on it, saying we're going to find a way to get off the Russian oil and gas as fast as we can.
Well, Japan, Japan released a massive part of their reserves, didn't they? I'm not sure who that's going to, but...
And the US. Yeah, and the US. So, yeah, so, I mean, he's bankrupted Russia, not for just for a couple of years, I think for a long time now, because that's where Russia made its money, oil and gas. Literally, now he's basically... What's that? I don't know what the analogy is here, but he's had his dinner. No, he's eating his dinner. He's weed on his dinner there, isn't he?
So Obama said this week, and he said the Putin that he met when he was in office is a completely different man now. So it's interesting him say that, isn't it? It's like something's changed in him over the last couple of years.
Maybe it's a different man.
Ah, really? Yeah. Good point. Yeah,
maybe it was a different man. The guy I met was like big curly dark hair.
Had a moustache. Guy.
Had a moustache. A moustache. Yeah. Yeah, that wasn't the Putin I met. That's a completely different guy.
Yeah,
obviously. And so that was his wife, Barry. All right, the lady with the moustache. That was his wife. Yeah,
he was more attractive then.
That's made him sense because he doesn't resemble him at all. The guy.
Right, as you were.
Yeah. XPF, by the way, have you noticed that on XPF announced two more Boom Battle Bars opening this month? Two, count them. One, two.
Good.
Two.
Good.
That's this is the fastest growing leisure company in the UK. Fastest growing.
Right.
Now,
cell phones or are they franchise?
I think those two are franchises, yes. But there's no capital expense to them. In fact, it's incoming money. It's money coming in. That's franchise model is so great, isn't it? So people pay you like $200,000 to set up a Boom Battle Bar, and then they have to pay you more for all the stuff and, you know, updates, the marketing, and all that stuff. That's a good model, isn't it? You know, no capital outlay for you at all. You help them along. You make sure it fits within the brand. It's all going to plan. Literally, they just pay you. People just pay you for because it's a great model. It works. People will pay you for that. So yeah, so that's good.
I missed that. Where were the two locations?
They are in the big towns, the sexy towns of Ipswich, ladies and gentlemen, and Exeter.
Ah, good, good, yeah.
So you can see why if they choose to own, some companies, you choose probably the O2 or Oxford Street, maybe not Ipswich, Exeter. I'm not saying it won't do well there. I'm not saying they don't have a thriving nightlife community. What I'm saying is, if you want to own something, you probably go for O2 and Oxford Street above Ipswich and Exeter, you know. But saying that, it's good for the brand. Do you think Elon Musk is a genius?
Moving on to the next subject.
Yeah, sorry, I was thinking this. Because I know Warren Buffett is. I mean, I would listen to his story. He's a genius. It's even some of the things. Like, literally, he knocked on the door of this insurance company when he was 19. So can you tell me how the business model works? This is Geico, which made him loads of money. It's called the government... it stands for the Government Insurance Company. So they're only... Government Employee Insurance Company. So they only insured government employees because they're quite sensible and all that stuff. But this guy... He asked this to the security guard. The security guard went and got a manager, and the manager was there and sit down with him for 4 hours. So I asked him questions. And he said, I was looking at the guy who was 19, but he wasn't a normal guy of 19. He's asked me like a guy who's 54, and he wouldn't stop asking questions. But he is Buffett is a genius, absolutely genius. But Musk, though, so he started PayPal, he started SpaceX, which has got the most satellites in the world. Have you seen that? There are about 4,500 satellites going around the world. 1,600 of those are SpaceX, his company, the most. I was surprised by that, were you? I thought it would be military or something. But by far the biggest, the second biggest company is OneWeb, a UK listed company, and not listed, a UK company, just with communications. They got like half of that amount, pretty much, or less than half of that amount. But then, you know, he started PayPal, he started Tesla, SpaceX, and he, in fact, he was part of the foundation of Twitter as well. But I think people are likening him to like Steve Jobs and Thomas Edison. They think he is a modern day genius. Do you think he is?
He's got certain something about him, hasn't he? I don't know about genius, but yeah.
Eccentric, I would probably say.
Well, he bought 9.2%, no, 9.1%
of Twitter.
Of Twitter, but he filed 9.2%. He made a mistake on the filings. So it was, people say he reported 9.2%, he was 9.1%. But what I liked about it, right, this is why I think he's a genius. So he did a poll on Twitter, right? He said, do you want an edit button, right?
Oh, yeah.
4.4 million votes on that, right? 73.6% said yes. 26.4% said no. But do you know what he actually said in there? Do you want an edit button? Now, the yes option was spelled Y-S-E. And the second option was spelled on. So that's, to me, that's quite clever. I quite like that.
Yeah. Which is,
showing why you need an edit button. And I don't think people are like, but if you look at it, you know, it's one of those things where the brain does the thing where it makes, you know, it recognizes the word and just assumes it's that word. If you look at it quickly, you think it's yes and no, but it's not. It's Z and on.
Yeah.
That's genius, isn't it?
He probably didn't come up with that. It was sorry, someone in marketing.
Well, send that, Steve. You know what? If Warren Buffett comes up with very good quotes. Do you know why? Because his brain's so good. He can do it. He probably did that. He's done so many good things. It's like this thing at the moment. You know, the Ed Sheeran thing, you know? Do you see that Ed Sheeran court thing? And these guys, if you listen to the song, that why, it's like, that's only a small part of it. And let's be honest, it's not as if Ed Sheeran's, that's his only hit. He's written loads of hits. Has he ripped off all those hits? He's like, the guy is a pop,
He's had a fair few ripping off, to be fair.
No, but Steve, he's not going to get away with ripping off that many. There's only so many kind of words and sounds out there, you know? And even the way he sings
it. That was the argument, wasn't it?
No, but even the way he sings it, if you listen to the entire song, the catchy bit isn't just that bit. It's the other bits, the way he sings it, it's, you know, the pattern of his voice, the sound of it. I just think, is it a coincidence this guy's had like 20 hits and he's a multi-millionaire? Has he ripped off 20 songs, really, and got away with it? They're sounding slightly different. They're not slightly different. It takes a lot more than that. The guy is a pop-writing genius. And this one guy, if that guy was so good, the guy's ripped it off, how come he's never had any hits? You know, if he's that genius, writing, why? It's like, no, mate.
Yeah, because he's writing grime music, that's why.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you want to be famous and rich, right, don't write grime music. Or if you're going to write grime music and you want to be famous and rich, do it very well to the point where there's a crossover. It's so appealing. That guy is only claimed to fame as, the little bit catchy bit is very quite similar, sounds a little bit similar to mine. So what? There's loads of songs that sound alike. It's nuts, isn't it?
We're in a swing type world now, aren't we, though?
Yeah. So what was the guy's name? I don't know what the guy's name was. But who is the most talented guy?
Ed Sheeran.
Who is the most talented guy out of those two? Ed Sheeran, or that guy you've never heard of, claims he came up with why? Is that all you've done in your life, fella? Is why? Ed Sheeran, nick that off me. That's his claim to fame for his life. Why?
I was interested. Does that guy now have to pay all of Ed Sheeran's legal fees?
I don't know, Steve. Maybe should do some research on that.
That's how it works normally, isn't it? I'd say he's going to be in a bit of trouble now with his finances.
Well, do you know what? That's the best motivation ever to write some hits, isn't it?
Right. Better go write some hits to pay the bills.
If I was him, I'd write a hit exactly as Ed Sheeran's. No, I did that! But do you see Ed Sheeran now? I saw an interview and he said, do you know what one of the best feelings ever is when you write something and you think you've got something? And I know that when you're researching a stock, I get the same kind of feeling. I love investing. I love it, right? When I start researching, I go, oh. And there are certain companies I know it's going to be a winner. I know it. And that feeling, and he said, when I write a hit song, you think, I think I've got something here. And you go, oh, that. He said, now that's been replaced by, oh, I know. So should we step back and have a listen around? Maybe it's, that's in my head from something else I've listened to. And he says, that's a pity now, isn't it? Because that initial, you know, frisson, that, you know, ooh, excited feeling you get. So,
I hadn't realised that he actually, in his past, has paid royalties and credit to, and given credit to various artists that he has, you know, he readily admits has he's borrowed elements of.
Dirty bastard!
No, no,
I didn't realise that.
No, no, but honestly, has said, oh yeah, no, I've kind of borrowed that. So, you know, a proportion of the royalty of this song needs to go to this artist or whatever, and has done that as part of. You know,
so now he videos everything. Do you see that? He videos literally when he's writing it. He videos it all.
Right.
So he says, look, so he said on his interview out there, I video now everything to prove that my thought processes.
There's him watching YouTube, nicking ideas.
Yeah, watching with a pen and pad. Write that down. That's good. Just catch you that. Yeah. Hey, so Ed, don't film this bit. What? Don't film the bit you're nicking it, because this is the whole point of it. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, right, yeah, cut that.
Yeah. Yeah, she loves you, yeah, yeah. Oh, hang on a second. Hang on. She loves me, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's good, isn't it?
No, no, no.
It's very similar to the Beatles, though, is it?
Who?
It's fine, they're all dead, pretty much. They can't do anything.
There was a film about that recently, wasn't it, with that guy that ripped off all the Beatles when... Anyway, there you go.
I don't know, Steve. What was it? No, it was a film. Oh, no.
Yesterday. I think it was called Yesterday.
Oh, yeah, no. Where the Beatles didn't exist, that was, and he came up with the songs, wasn't it?
That's entirely different.
Yeah, that's entirely different.
Well, it's not really. It's still him ripping off the Beatles songs.
That was based on a bizarre premise that the rest of the world lost the ability to remember the Beatles.
That's right, yeah.
No, there were still a couple of people who did remember them. So.
Yeah, that's right. One or two Asian guy. Steve, have you seen that film? Slipping seamlessly into TV recommendations.
I love it.
Would you recommend that film, Steve?
Not really, no.
I know. I saw that. It made me laugh, and I thought, that's quite funny. But I don't think the idea, you know, has the sustainable
the best film.
For an hour and a half, 2 hours, you know?
No.
The reason that popped into my head, because Ed Sheeran was in that film, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Good point. Oh, nice link.
There we are. It's good. Anything else, boys? Anything else we're talking about?
No. Has anybody got any TV recommendations?
Yeah, We Crashed.
Oh, yeah, you said that. Yeah. It's on Apple TV.
I haven't got Apple, so...
And Clarkson's Farm.
Well, is the new season out?
I don't know. Get with the plan, really. Have you watched anything this week, boys?
No. Oh, I did start... I watched a bit of that Jimmy Savile documentary.
Oh, yes. I need to finish that. In fact, I've watched the first episode. Very disturbing.
Very disturbing.
You know, the odd thing was, it's like the power of media back in the day.
Yes.
I used to work, right? I used to work in Capital Radio in London, and there were people there saying, apparently they know someone who knows someone, who's an older person who works in the industry, said, when Jimmy Savile dies... lots of bad things are going to come out about him. But yet the power of TV then was such that he was such a pull and a draw for the BBC and all that, that people would turn a blind eye. And this is pretty... In fact, this comes round to what I'm watching at the moment, which is highly recommended, but The Morning Show, and that Mitch, you know, played by... What's his name? I can't think of it.
Steve Carell,
And you realise that at the time, they know it, that's the business. If a guy's putting the figures in and making the money, you just shut your mouth and get on with it. And he goes, that's awful, isn't it? Because, you know, it's... These people are not unique. They're presenting bland programmes on TV. There are many people replace it, especially in the BBC back in the day. There's only one channel. You're going to get big figures. Nothing else to watch, you fools. So why put a paedophile on TV? Pick someone who's quite nice. It's like, it's nuts, isn't it?
Oh.
All right, Steve.
But yeah, it it struck me that just how, you know, like kind of film star esque, wasn't he? Like in terms of like the popularity, because he had 20 million people watching him.
Yeah,
it's funny. You look back at you've seen Ed Pete the first episode, and you just think, totally a complete weirdo. It's like, how did no one see this?
At the time, though, that was like people just think, that's part of his character, his genius. You know, he's
wacky,
he's quirky, and he's unique. Yeah. You know, and. Yeah, it's nuts, absolutely nuts. But hopefully we're going to a more transparent life, you know, world these days, where everyone. In fact, let's get the stage where you do think about that though. If you look at like BBC Breakfast now, it's so bland. You know, you've got they're scared to have character or make a joke because they may get inundated with people so offended by anything. It's so bland, isn't it? That Sally and what's the other guy who's leaving now at Channel 5? What's his name? Dan. It's so Dan bland. Bro. The things they laugh at, it's not even funny, it's just bland. It's like absolute wallpaper. Absolute, isn't it? They're scared to make any jokes and go, oh my God, oh, can't say that. And I think, God, isn't that so far removed from real life, you know? So,
I listened back to some of the clips from our XFM show that we did a long time ago, and some of the stuff there was close to the hairdresser. I was like, whoa, we really
close
couldn't get away with it. Yeah, get away with some of that even nowadays.
but even, you know, I mean, even going back then, though, I mean, if you look at the way that guy Mitch, the character, is around The Office and like that, I was never, ever anywhere near like that, was you ever?
No,
decent human beings, no matter what age you're in, what decade you're in, you don't just take advantage of someone and in a sexual, because you are the main star, and crack on. It's like, what? So, I mean, you know, people say, oh, back in the day it was okay. No, it wasn't really, was it? It never was, really. So I don't understand. I think it's just common decency.
Sorry, can I just make it clear? Our XFM show, we weren't like hitting on girls or anything.
Yeah,
so it was just inappropriate jokes.
No, it was purposely sort of risque, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I should make that clear that we weren't.
Yeah, I know. Justin took it to a different direction there.
No, it wasn't in that vein. But I think the riskiest thing, we ever did was getting girls on trying to identify birds, bird noises.
Oh yeah!
Do you remember we used to play them a bird noise?
Yeah. Yep.
And tit or swallow, we used to say. That was. What do you think that bird is? Tit or swallow? I'd say. So you're a tit or swallow, yeah? Swallow. You're a swallow. Okay. And that was it. But the people coming on were all set up, you know. So they knew the joke.
Absolutely.
I'd probably be sacked for that now and hounded out and say he's a sex pest.
Yeah.
That's what Megan calls me anyway. Anyway. That's it, right? On that note, have a nice weekend, boys. Speak to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.